I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Yo, Elizabeth Dutton.
Yo, Zarin Burnett.
Okay, I've been looking for you all over. I'm glad you're here because I'm tired. My back hurts.
Sure.
So I had a question for you.
Yes.
Can you sit down for a second?
All right, fine.
All right, you seated? You comfortable?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you know what's ridiculous?
I do.
Oh, okay, well, then you go.
Okay, so what's ridiculous is I got a couple aspects of this that's ridiculous.
Hmm.
One, it's ridiculous how much I love to lurk on Reddit.
Yeah.
Two, this AITA, am I the a-hole?
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. It's a subreddit. It's ridiculous how much good content there is there.
Yes.
And this particular post is absolutely peak ridiculous.
Okay, how so?
So I'm going to read it to you.
Oh, please.
My 28-year-old female, so she's 28-year-old female, boyfriend, who's 29-year-old male.
Okay, so she's 28, she's a woman, he's a boy.
Correct.
Okay.
He, of 2 years, will not stop speaking in a fake Italian-American accent and keeps making up foreign words.
Okay. So he has, like, the ambient translation.
Oh, you're going to find... Oh, okay. To preface this, huh? I love my boyfriend, and he is super sweet, nice, smart guy that I feel lucky to have, but his behavior lately is freaking me out and makes me worried for the future.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I need to also say this is old. This is not a new post.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about them anymore.
But it's something that it's ridiculous. It keeps coming into my head all the time.
Oh, so you just think about this. This is something that's like an earworm from Reddit.
It pops into my head randomly.
Okay, word.
So to continue, my boyfriend loves movies, especially mob movies.
I'm with him.
He has all of the Sopranos DVDs at his place, and I'm pretty sure he still watches them that way. That's fine. Obviously, you can watch and enjoy whatever you want.
Yeah.
She's open.
Be you. I like her.
But last week, he saw The Irishman with some friends, and since then, he will not stop talking in, like, a fake, stereotypical mobster accent. We were in an Uber the other night after going out to dinner, and admittedly, the driver was going a little fast, but my boyfriend kept muttering things like, "Who's this guy, huh? Taylor not Dunya over here." And shouting, "Ho!" as we took corners. He would not shut up and even gave the driver a 1-star review saying it was about respect. Everyone has their quirks. I get it. And they can be what makes someone special. At first, it was even kind of cute, funny. But I just can't really understand this shift all of a sudden. It's been a week, and he continues to make asides in this voice, and when he gets drunk, he speaks in made-up Italian. Like, we were having dessert at my sister's, and he came up to me and said, "Hey, Ma, I gotta get home and hit the drapini." I'm the designated driver. I don't drink. So I asked him why he wants to leave and what a drapini is. His response was, "You know, like a shower." Drapini is not a word in any language.
He also
never called me Ma before, ever, and now he does it almost all the time. I feel crazy. Like, is this going to be a permanent feature of his personality now? I know this sounds incredibly stupid compared to some of the other serious issues on here, but I am really just nervous about what this means about his personality / mental health. He really is a sweet, loving guy with a wonderful family, and we have a lot in common, but just, like, I don't even know how to begin to approach this. I want to tell him off and be like, why do you keep doing this voice? Can you please stop? We don't live together, so thankfully it's not a constant thing. But like, what if it did? What if we did? And what if it was?
Yeah.
Is this the kind of thing?
Forget about it, huh? Ma, come on. Thing
you just deal with when it's someone you love? Edit. I just want to add that he's not Italian at all either. So I'm also worried people will get offended when we're out or something. So that's ridiculous.
That is very ridiculous.
Am I the a-hole post?
And that just lives rent-free in your head, as they say.
All the time. I always, when I go to take a shower, I want to be like, oh, hitting the drapini. Oh. You know, so I just say it into the empty hallway and go about my business.
So could I get away with this? Because this sounds like fun.
Do it. Just do it. Let's see what happens.
Let's just see where this goes, huh?
Oh.
I want the update from the girlfriend of like, okay, he stopped doing it after he got beaten up by a bunch of Italians in Philadelphia. We were there for a game.
Pixford didn't happen.
Oh, man, that is great.
I know.
Well, if you got a second, I got something for you.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Imagine a front man for a band.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the same person, though, the same front man,
mm-hmm.
they've never performed live before.
Okay. Well, you know, everyone has to perform.
Everyone
gets
a first time, right? Yep. Yeah. And they've never recorded even a single song before.
Okay.
And all they really have is a dream. They're a front man with a dream. And so they reach for that dream and they decide to build themselves a crime ladder to the stars.
Oh, I love that.
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous. Elizabeth.
This is Aaron.
Okay. This dude's name was Rob. And, okay, wait.
Does he have a last name?
No. First, we got to get through Rob.
Okay.
That is a capital R and a capital R, followed by a lowercase O and then a B. And another B.
So
Rob.
Right, yeah.
Middle name Tall. But wait, that's not just tall like you might imagine. That's a capital T and a lowercase a followed by five capital L's.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like he knew he'd need to keep a couple L's handy for the rest of his life.
Was he born in MySpace?
Oh God. I don't do. Last name? University.
Rob Tall University?
I think it's university for like, you do like a mashup where it's like, okay, your first name is the street you lived on. The last name is a place you're least likely to be found. So the reason I bring him up, this Rob Tall University, he once launched a multi-million dollar scam to become a rock star. And it worked.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, until it did not work.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's why we're talking about him today.
But God bless.
Job-blessed his brother. Now, before we dive into today's dish of criminal deliciousness, have you ever heard of Sarah Howe?
I think so.
I had not heard of her.
Refresh me on
okay,
this one.
This is not somebody I knew. Sarah Howe was a dame who was ahead of her time. She once had her own bank.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the Ladies Deposit Company.
Never heard of her.
Yeah. This is a big deal because it was a bank for unmarried women.
Oh, that's huge.
And that was necessary.
I'm imagining this is in the olden times,
1878,
not like last year.
Yeah.
1878.
Yeah.
Got
this
it.
Is when women didn't have any guaranteed property rights.
Right. Right.
Or secured financial rights. This is basically the Jane Austen days, but
mm-hmm.
America. So Sarah Howe, she has this bank for ladies, and she told everyone it was a Quaker charity. You know, it's like something for these those who are less fortunate, you know, mm-hmm. in this time, women.
The lady bank. It just makes me think of when they gender products, mm-hmm. like, you know, there'll be like a toolkit that you can get, and
yes.
the pink one is like $14, and the blue one is like $12,
tiny,
and it's the exact same stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little pink screwdriver, little pink hammer, little pink ratchet
pink,
for you.
Pink lady bank.
So this pink lady bank, right, she's running for the less fortunate women. There was something else about this bank. Her bank for single ladies offered women something that you couldn't get at other banks.
Mm.
High returns. She, in the neighborhood of 8%.
Oh, wow.
And that's 8% per month.
Yes. Well, Shazam.
Now, surprise, surprise, there was no Quaker charity. There were no 8% returns on the investment. And heck, there was no bank. It was all a scam. And 1,200 people fell victim to old Sarah Howe.
Oh.
Yep. And she conned people out of about $500,000. Now, in 1878, that would be $15 million today.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it took 2 years for her scam to go pop. And 1880, a local paper broke a story. Sarah Howe was promptly busted, tried, convicted. She did 3 years in the big house. And then she's like, oh, I got out. I'm free. I'm ready to start a new life. I think I'm going to go immediately back to criming. So she went and became a fortune teller. And she managed to continue to fleece the sheep until she was put in the dirt. Hmm. Now, she was a mere amateur compared to the man who would come to be the name associated with these types of crimes.
Oh.
Charles Ponzi.
Ponzi, yeah.
Do you know anything about his deal? Why we call it a Ponzi scam or scheme?
Oh, he's the OG with it, right?
Totally. In the 1920s, dude was running, he's a Boston-based con man. Mm-hmm. He'd been telling his investors, right? Oh, double your money, right? Just give me 90 days, give me your money, and I'm going to come back to you with a bunch more. And they're like, I don't know about that. And he's like, yeah, just trust me. They're like, well, what am I investing in? He's like, okay. Turns out, if you take international postal stamps, you can buy these and then redeem them. And he came up with this abstract mm-hmm. like financial come up based on international postage stamps. Mm-hmm. So people were like, oh, okay. He's like, just give me a little bit of time. Now, in 7 months' time, this dude, like, I'm just blown away how much he did in 7 months' time without the internet, without, like, the ability to get around quickly. He's on, like, horses and carriage and cars and stuff, yeah. right? Well, yeah, like, old school cars. So this Ponzi scheme that he'd done, this is how it works, mm-hmm. basically. It's a simple 1-2-3. So one, Ponzi would promise that he could double his investors' money, so we covered that, and then his claim would attract the first round of investors, mm-hmm. right? Now he's got some investors, he takes their money, he then uses this money from the second round of investors to pay back the first round right. of investors, right? And then word spreads that the first people got their money back, then this more people come in with that third round and fourth round, he pays off the second round of investors. By this time, the fifth round is a huge group of people ready to give their money up, and there's more of them than there are original yeah. investors to yeah. pay off. So you have like a float time, right? So to quote my man Louis Anderson from Coming to America, and that's when the big bucks start rolling in. So Charles Ponzi's pyramid scheme netted him $8 million in 7 months.
And then that's in those days.
That would be worth $120 million today.
In 7 months.
He did it like boom, boom, boom. People were like, oh, they were throwing their money at him. Just like, wow. Yeah. So now to vacuum up that kind of cash, he took in 30,000 investors. That's how many people came to him ready to be conned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So eventually he gets busted and then Ponzi gets sentenced to a decade behind bars. And then we gave his name to the scheme so everyone mm-hmm. would remember it, right? Rob Tall University, he's like, you know, I can make that old school scammer really have one of them ether sipping idiot grins because I'm going to do what your boy Willie Sutton does. He decides to go where the money is.
Yes.
He's like, I'm not going to one and in a time in it with just all these individual people. He goes right to the banks because I'm going to go scam the banks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, his dream was to be a rock star, so he thought to himself, why not get the banks to invest in my dream?
Yeah, why you know, not?
It's exactly, this is a new why century.
Why not, Saren?
So, dude was born Robert Mawinney. So okay. you can see why he changed his name, uh-huh. right? Ma Winnie. It's a little bit tough to be a rock star. Like, I love Rob Ma Winnie.
Just well, sounds... you know what? If he would have been dedicated to it, it's all about the attitude.
Oh, I agree. But it's just saying, you can hear why he might have been teased as a kid. And he's like, you know what I'm going to do is change my name from Bob Ma Winnie. So,
Bob Ma Winnie.
Exactly. I'm just saying.
All
so
right.
Doob's the son of Anaheim, California. SoCal boy. And we don't know much about his childhood, so I'm just going to skip ahead to his pre-fame days.
Let's just say he was born in Disneyland. What year was he born?
Yes.
Born?
Yes.
What year was he born, did?
Let's see, 1980.
He was born in 1980?
Yes, people were born in 1980, Elizabeth.
In my mind, I thought he was like born in the 60s. What's wrong with me? I thought this was an old story.
No, this is a new one.
Okay.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
All right.
So by the time homie is 30 years old, he was on top of the world, right? He'd become a real life rock star. He was the front man for the hard rock band Lights Over Paris.
The name of the band?
Have you ever heard of Lights Over Paris?
Yeah, I followed them on tour for 3 years. Lights Over Paris?
Yes.
LOP?
LOP, L-O-P. Like, it's like IHOP, but LOP.
It's like a spinoff of Bombs Over Baghdad.
Exactly. They were an LA-based band. Their fans called them LOP. If they had fans, they would have called
sure,
them LOP.
Of course.
So our dude, Rob Tall University, he really wants to be a rock star, right? So he's like, oh, I'm going to become the American Liam Gallagher, but I'm going to do that with just way less talent.
I want to know what they sound like, Zarin.
Okay, imagine, like, I had to listen to a bunch of the songs to do the research for this. And, like, let's just say, imagine, like, the most vanilla, emptied out pop song you could imagine. Like, if you took Justin Timberlake's producer and said, okay, take everything out of this. Just leave the music, but take all the out of this. He's like, I got you, son. And then you hit that, that's what it is. It's like a track of, like, all the same beats, all the same sounds, but there's nothing there.
Interesting.
It's really weird.
It's Lights Over Paris.
Yeah, I'm going to play you some later so you can just have your mind blown too.
I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll get into the lyrics and the music, all of it. Well, you may be saying to yourself, Zarin, how did this less talented Liam Gallagher wannabe, who, you know, decided to con a bunch of banks into investing in his dream of being America's next top superstar, become the guy that we're talking about today if the music is this bad?
Yeah, I am asking myself, Zarin.
It's a great question, Elizabeth. It really is.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking. The answer, a highly focused Ponzi scheme, Elizabeth.
Yes.
Yes, that's why we're talking about my man Rob Tall, University 5Ls.
RTU. Now,
he decided he'd do business with JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Zions, it's a small SoCal bank, and Comerica, all four LA branches, right? Now, he didn't just walk in, slap down his band's demo and say, I'd like $8 million, please. No, that's actually not far off from what he did do.
Mm-hmm.
So according to the U.S. Attorney's Office, in August 2009, Rob Tall University strolled into a branch of Comerica in L.A. He slapped down paperwork from the investment firm Charles Schwab, and he asked for $3 million. The bank, however, didn't laugh in his face. Like, they would have laughed in my face, but they did not laugh in Rob Tall University.
They
would have laughed in most people's face. They didn't laugh in his face. Do you know why?
Because he was wearing eyeliner?
Well, the paperwork he slapped down stated that the front man had $7 million in an investment account.
Oh.
Yeah, and the account statement also reported that the frontman had $5 million in net annual income, and it claimed that his personal assets totaled $7.5 million. And those numbers made some sense because in his personal asset was listed a recording studio. He said that it was, you know, worth $12 million in annual income. So the bank was like, oh, yeah, of course. Now, of course, all this paperwork was faked.
Yeah, I was going to say, why didn't they want a digital
what happens?
Of all this?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to need some more corroborating evidence.
Yeah.
Well, the bank decided, you know, let's do our due diligence. They weren't just willing to take the Charles Schwab faked piece of paper with, like, the white out
stains. Because, I mean, if you told me they were, I was about to get heading over to my printer. Do some dabbling.
Like, I got the ink.
A little bit of dabbling.
Well, as you know, banks prefer the people start businesses that make sense. If they're going to dabble in the business world, they're like, do restaurants. Do, like, a leather goods store. Do something that we know how this works,
Yeah,
right?
If you're going to be Jimmy Dabblins about it.
Exactly. But, like, Rockstar, how do we dabble in that? We don't even know where to...
Yeah, that's a rough one.
Where do we put the dibble in the dabble, right? So Rob Tall University is like, I got you covered. Don't worry. My studio will be collateral for this money. Remember, $12 million. That can be yours. You could own this studio. They're like, okay. Suddenly he's E.F. Hutton. They're like, we're listening. You got my ear. But it wasn't enough because, as you pointed out, they're bankers. They wanted corroboration. They needed more paperwork. Proof of his income.
Yeah.
Rob Tall University's like, no problemo. I got this, brother. So he goes back and he fakes up some more paperwork, comes back in. He's like, there you go. Will that do? They're like, that's good. That means, yeah, this is good, more paperwork. But we're going to need, like, tax returns. He's like, no problem. Goes back, fakes those up, shows up with tax returns. The banker's like, okay, this is all looking good. You know, you got all the right numbers here. He's got spreadsheets. He's got bank statements, whatever else.
He just papered them. He overdid it.
Exactly. They're into the paper. They love it. They're, like, getting the giddy off it, right? But they're still undecided because they're bankers. Bankers, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, come by the studio. They're like, okay, we'll do that. He's like, you need to see with your own eyes. See what you would get in collateral. They're like, cool. Due diligence, right?
Right.
One problem. Rob Tall University has no studio.
No,
he doesn't even own one. He doesn't work at one. He's not like, you can do, like, a sitcom plot.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Oh, yeah, this is my studio. No.
No.
No, no. But his no problemo was his attitude, because what did he have? He had friends, Elizabeth.
He had a friends and a dream.
Yes, exactly. Two-fisted fighter, this guy. Friends in one hand, dream in the other, knocking out fate. So he goes and he borrows his friend's studio for this bank tour.
Oh,
he's
like,
hey,
that
guys,
sense.
You want to get in on my criminal conspiracy? They're like, bet. So the studio was in Burbank, California. It was owned by a pair of brothers. Now, not brothers,
actual brothers.
Yeah, the Salazar brothers, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so Jason and Matthew. Jason was the younger one, 28. Matthew was the older one, 29. Thus, it was called Matt Salazar Recording Productions. Yeah.
Hmm.
They were also part owners in the LA Sound Collective, if you were in underground sound collective.
Never heard of
it. Well, anyway. The day for the studio tour comes. Rob Tall University is like, come on down. He meets the bankers at his studio. He was not just a wannabe rock star. He was also a generous host. Yeah. So he was like,
Very gracious.
Exactly. He's like, let me show you around. So he goes, gives them the deluxe tour of the studio. He showed them the framed records, the soundboard, the mixing and mastering areas, the mic stands, whatever there was to show them. Look, here's our favorite couch. You know, you give them the whole tour, right? So Rob Tall University also casually bragging that he, quote, is a successful ghostwriter for various artists. Just, you know, various artists. Just name some. Probably them. So he also confided that running this recording studio and ghostwriting for rock stars, these are just my sidelines. Mm. My real passion, my true passion is writing my own songs. And they're like, oh, you're one of those. Yeah. Great. So and I imagine the bankers are like, please don't play your demo. Please don't play your demo. But he's like, okay. But they're business types. So they're also equally business gracious. They're like, yes, what else do you have? Do you have more paperwork to show us? The studio looks great. This is really a studio. We see that. They're like, okay, they go back to their office. He fills out the rest of the application. They give him $3 million.
Weren't they concerned as it was called Mike Salazar Studios?
I guess they just overlooked that. They thought maybe that's a stage name. I don't know what they thought, but they were cool with it. And they're like, yeah, this is his studio. He says he walked us around. He showed me the boards.
He had the keys.
Yeah, exactly. He knew where to park. So then he gets his $3 million from the bank and he's like, okay, that went really well. So what is he going to do, right? I like to think after a moment, Rob Tall University, he gazed across the Burbank parking lot outside of his strip mall music studio. And he said in that like bygone tone of the old pioneers, like, you know, staring into the middle distance of the horizon.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like, ah, I see a future here. Because his dream had become true. Like he realized he'd found a place where one day I can raise up my own crop of rock stars and roadies. And so he decides. Exactly. But, you know, obviously it's going to be less, you know, dramatic as I rendered it. Mm-hmm. But from court documents, we do know that he said that he wanted the bank's money to expand his business, to make new purchases, and to finish construction on a new recording room in the studio. And that was what sounded perfectly reasonable to the bank examiners, and thus they gave him the $3 million.
Yeah.
And so they're like, boom, here is your $3 million loan, sir. And now, now he is about to start becoming a real rock star because he's got rock star cash.
That's right. That's
Let's take a little break. And then I'll tell you how he's going to blow through this money and get himself
like a rock star
into Billboard's top charts.
What?
Yeah.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder,
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so now my man, Rob Tall University,
yes,
is a real funded, almost wannabe rock star guy.
Yeah, he's a $3 millionaire.
Exactly, the big time. I told you the real big money's going to come rolling in. Now he's got the big bucks. So that first loan application, that went well, right?
Sure.
He walked him through the fake studio, or actually the real studio, but you know, pretending it to be his. So Rob Tall University, what's he going to do now? He's like, I should do that again. So he goes and does it again, and then again, and then again. He went to work scamming banks. Like, he ironically was far better at scamming banks than being a rock star. He should have been a bank scammer. That's what he should have turned pro at.
Well, it sounds like he was.
I don't know if you can, if you get like groupies for being a bank scammer, but anyway, if he could, you know, I think
once
that would
have
been.
Once he goes to jail, he'll have all those gals who like writing to fellas
in
prison.
Oh, good point.
Yep.
Yeah, we just need to get some journalists to interview him. He's good.
Yeah.
He's got the rock star life.
Cell block rock star.
So, Rob Tall University, he gets the initial $3 million from Comerica, right? Then he went and he scams an additional $750,000 from Bank of America, then a cool half million from Zions Bank, and lastly, there was this sizable sum he peeled, $2.4 million from JP Morgan Chase.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that's about $7 million in total.
Okay.
Right? So, then he apparently re-upped on a couple of those loans. He pulled in a couple more and brings it up to $11 million in total.
Wow.
Yeah, his eventual lawyer, Al Jaron, would later argue, quote, all of a sudden he was trapped in a situation that got out of his control.
Oh.
Yeah, well, yeah, I bet it did. Look,
I just, like, $11 million with nothing behind it is just nuts.
Oh, dude, I like the it's like, it just got out of control. What's the internet meme? Well, 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 isn't my old friend the consequences of my actions? It's like, well, it's like him.
And out of control, like, at any point, he could have, yeah, whatever.
Exactly.
It's idiotic.
He's a victim of himself, Elizabeth.
Yeah,
look what
really
I did.
It's really hard for him. It's hard to be Rob Tall.
Why are these banks doing this to me? So before the legal reality set in of what he had done, Rob Tall University went to work being a rock star. And that's what we want to talk about, right?
Yes.
So how did he start blowing this money? Well, you know, well, first, I need to just show you what he looks like. I haven't really done a good job of describing
him. I know, I have a really
him.
Weird picture in my...
This
oh,
is him with the world's
God.
Most interesting man. Now,
wait,
that's not the actual world's most interesting man. That's a cardboard cutout of the world's most interesting man.
Heavens.
So, yeah, and he's not a very tall guy. And there's, you know, nothing wrong with, you know, him not being tall. I was a short kid. I grew late. But my man, if you're going to name yourself Rob Tall and then and call attention to that and then put in five capital L's to make sure you don't miss it.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. So, old Rob, not exactly Tall University, his suddenly stacked bank account, right? He's just, things get ridiculous for him. So, he rents an apartment in downtown LA. He gets, he finds this luxury condo building. He gets a place on the 35th story. He's like, you know, why would he do this? Because that's what rock stars do, Elizabeth.
Sure.
So later on, he would then move places because that wasn't, I guess, rock star enough. So he went up to the Hollywood Hills. Why?
Oh,
because that's what rock stars
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
And his rent was $10,500 a month.
Oh,
what does he care?
Ouch.
It's not his money.
That's true.
So Rob would also, he loved to take trips. He was like, I like to bounce around the world because why? That's what rock stars do.
He's a citizen of the world.
Exactly. You go down to the Caribbean, you go to South America.
He did it to be able to put all them flags in his Instagram.
He had the
bio.
Big map. Yeah. And he wanted all the pins. So I would imagine that he would tell himself, I'm going to go out there and like find my fans, like the ones in South America and Europe that are waiting for me. But I can't even get myself through that sentence. So anyway, Rob, he was like the kind of guy who liked, you know, all the beautiful and expensive things in life, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if he did that because he liked rocks. I thought that was what rock stars did. And he just needed to be in the glamorous places or if he himself
he
liked it.
Yeah.
But he spent his money that way, or rather the bank's money that
way. Right.
So after spending a decade or so dreaming of becoming the next Blink-182, because that was his inspiration.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, the dude was
honey.
He'd been down there in SoCal dreaming of being like, you know, whatever, Travis and Tom and Mark, and, right?
Yeah.
They get their names.
I don't know. One of them's a UFO guy. That's all I remember.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's the Tom one.
Who knows?
Anyway, Tom DeLonge. There we go. Okay, so this dude's, he's like, okay, I want to be a rock star. He's spending 10 years trying to do it. He can't do it, so he turns to crime, right? Now that he's got the money, he's blowing stuff like as fast as he can. So he's like, oh, what else do I need? Like, I got my rock star house. I need a tour bus.
Did he have other people in his band?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Oh, okay. Yes. So I'm just like, okay.
Oh, yeah. That's why I haven't mentioned them yet. band. So his tour, he gets the tour bus, right? Mm-hmm. $750,000. This is not a normal tour bus, you know, not for old Robb Tall University.
Bus.
Oh, yeah. Like a full. This dumb bunny's tour bus, it was so tricked out that Limo Digest wrote about it.
Okay.
Limo Digest, it sounds like a magazine someone to write for in like in a rom-com in the 90s.
Totally.
Like, I write for Limo Digest. That's why I'm here on the...
Well, it's like in a Hallmark movie.
Yes, exactly. You know? It makes no sense.
I've been writing for Limo Digest, and I have to go back home to help my parents. If he wanted to be like Blink-182, he should have gotten an old van.
Oh, totally. Yes.
That's a real way.
And played the music.
Oh, well, there's that.
All of the stuff. He should have done the other part of the rock
there's
star.
There's so many should-haves.
So anyway, Limo Digest does a feature story on dude's bus, the new bus for a rock band, Lights Over Paris. And the
dude, this is also fake.
The dude had taste. Not good taste, but he had taste,
okay.
Right? So I went and I looked. The bus was designed to look like an airplane, right? And on the side of the bus, he had these exterior awnings, which when you expanded them, they looked like airplane wings. Inside the bus, he had all these little airplane, like fake wings, like for the knobs to the faucet or whatever, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, everything. Exactly. So luxurious master suite, custom built. Master bedroom suite also has a recording studio in it with privacy glass. I watched a YouTube video from the makers of this tour bus
because
they were so proud of the work that they did, and it's still up. You can't find a lot of stuff from this guy, but you can find the tour bus. So he actually had like there's a wine cooler in there. There was a custom red iron granite countertops. The forward lounge for his bandmates, it boasted a 3D Sony TV, which was a big deal for the time. There were also bunks for his, quote, bandmates, which had their own TVs and game systems. On the side of the bus, it was painted the words Lights Over Paris, you know, that way people would know who the hell was inside. The finished bus, it looks like, you know, I don't know, like if Hot Topic in Miami, right, was handing out the company's like first romance novel and it was like complete with neon cover fonts and someone was like, you know what, this would make a great tour bus.
Oh,
that's what it looks like.
God.
Here, well, I'll just show you.
Wait, Elizabeth. Oh, you're so full of show and tell today. What? Oh.
And if
that is not what I was picturing.
Oh, yeah. And this is what you would see if you happened to be stuck behind this bus in traffic. Yeah.
Would I be throwing stuff at?
Oh, yeah. He's got a picture of himself and a bunch of the bandmates. My fingers are in the air.
But the front of it is a cone. Like
it's a giant cone. Like it's supposed to look like a ship, like a plane, like the Concorde or something. It's super extended. Blast out front.
Who owns this now?
And on the back, it looks like it should be like, we are the band Cruise Ship Magicians. It's amazing, right? So I don't know who owns this now. I actually do not know.
Okay.
I could not find that. But you may be wondering, right? Okay, so he's got this tour bus for like being Adam Lambert's opening act, right?
Yeah, right?
And he's like, oh, everything's set. But does he have a band? Like, who are the cruise ship magicians?
That's my question.
Right? Well, Elizabeth, as you pointed out, and I think it's right, if you have a bus that looks like an airplane, that's not what you need to become Led Zeppelin. You need other things. So Robb Tall University is like, well, I'm just going to get me a band. So he gets a bunch of session musicians.
Wait, he got the tour bus first,
yeah,
and then got the band.
Yeah, so he gets like the session musicians, and then he like has them like,
oh man,
write the album with
them.
Oh
man,
he writes all these songs, right? And then he goes out and he's like, oh, I need to do videos, right? So he's making videos before the albums come out. So he's making videos, and so there was one of these Lights Over Paris music videos. Well, there was a guy who, his name's Brian Knight. He went on 2020 to talk about this, like how it went. He was trying to describe his experience on a Lights Over Paris video set. And I quote, it was crazy. There was a lot happening. There was a lot of booze and a lot of champagne, and the hotel suite ended up getting trashed at the end of the trip. So that's all just rock star stuff, right? Mostly.
Yeah.
But then he goes into, remember, this is the video vixen era in hip hop. This is early 2000s.
Right? Okay.
So back to Brian King. I have no idea where all the women came from. He'd get a woman to sit in the middle of the buffet table and hand people sushi off of her body.
Oh, God.
Now, why would he have a naked woman with a sushi buffet on her belly? Because that's what rock stars do, isn't it?
Of course.
Or maybe they don't because they actually have it's class.
Disgusting.
And they're not
eating
like
raw
douchebags.
Fish off of someone's gross skin.
Yeah, you may be, oh my God, completely raw fish off of warm skin. It's just like, this is
that's
not
just
what
like
I,
got glitter on it.
Yeah, like you got the cool side cool and that warm side warm. Anyway, so you can't have a music video without a song. And you've asked what they sound like, right?
Yes.
Well, some of the Banks money went into the studio time, right? Mm-hmm. He paid for session musicians to record his Lights Over Paris album.
Mm-hmm.
He hired a lush string section. It was like he was doing his best impression of Charlie Parker with strings. He's like, I need strings. We're like, bro, you're not Charlie Parker. He's like, no, my cheesy, forgettable pop songs need strings. So his whole band, as I said, session musicians. So there's no band yet, but his store-bought band, they do record albums. Mm-hmm. And,
no, albums, plural.
Sorry, songs for the album,
oh,
I should
okay.
say. Yeah,
whew.
Songs for the album, right? But I like is that one of the songs, like the first single, I guess, it was called Turn Off the Lights. Now, the band's name is Lights Over Paris. Just saying.
Like, Lights Over Paris, are you okay? Do you need to talk to someone?
Yeah, like I'm not the fake rock star here.
Everyone check on not, Lights Over Paris.
They're sending mixed signals.
Turn off the lights.
So for their EP, Turn Off the Lights... their first that they named
like it could have been Turn On the Lights or just something totally different.
Not just a song, their single, they also named the EP Turn Off the Lights.
Geniuses.
From Lights
or
Over
Genius
Paris.
I should
yeah.
say.
So the band decides to make their visually stunning music video. They're like, we need to get, you know, the best stuff. So they hire actors, actresses. And the main bikini-clad actress, Olivia Hart, was suspicious of where this talentless band and this talentless singer got the money to hire someone like her. So she went up and just asked the dude. She was like, how do you have the money to do this? What's going on here? Rob Tall University thought for a moment, ran his fingers through his hair, and he's like, yeah, well, my grandpa died. So he's like, I took his money and I dropped six figures.
This one's for you, Grandpa.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Wait, and so she's walking around in a bikini. It seems so outlandish to me when I think about how videos used to be. Like, I just can't imagine a band doing like a Bikini Babe video anymore.
Oh, yeah, no.
Except for Rob Tall.
You should see this one. I did my due diligence, Elizabeth. I watched the video. I listened to the songs. Here's a sample lyric. I have a sample lyric for you. Ready? This is, I met a girl. She's super cool. I love the city lights. She loves the pool. I'm signing autographs. She writes at school. She's taking photographs that make me want to drool. I'm like, yeah, you know I'm into you. I did no music for that. It doesn't need the music. The poetry. It's right there.
I momentarily lost the ability to speak. Wait, she's writing at school? How old is she?
Exactly. There's so many red flags, too. So I watched the videos.
She
I said.
Likes the pool. Yeah. That rhymes with school.
And I'm
old super
fool.
Cool.
So the video features him walking around a rental L.A. mansion as his girl is checking her makeup on a floaty in the pool.
Of course. She
also reads a book because, you know, that was in the lyrics. So there's a shot of her reading a book. And the whole thing is about as brainless a music video as you've ever seen. It's as bad and as dumb as the song.
Like, and it's like pop punk, you said?
No, it's more like Justin Timberlake punk.
You keep coming back to that.
That's what it sounds like to me. Like, but if you just take everything out of that, you know, like if you just dial down all the things that are talent or music or good and just... you leave the stuff that is beat and his string and his voice.
You take out the holy grail.
Exactly. So when in this music video, I was like sitting there watching it. And I'm like, I'd be willing to bet you if I just like randomly thought of an idea, it'd be better than this. So I was like, okay, if you took like a camera, turned it on, put it in like a red wagon and just drug it down the street, that would be a better music video than this.
Better.
If you took the camera, turned it on and just kicked it down a flight of stairs, that would be a better music video than this. But whatever. The guy didn't do any of that because he's got millions of dollars. He just threw millions of dollars at the screen, right? So now chasing good money with bad, the front man decided to guide his pretend band of session musicians onto the pages of Billboard magazine. His plan works. On the band's website, the band's website, their sound is described as, quote, a mix of melodic rock hooks with pulsating dance rhythms and a taste of hip-hop. That taste of hip-hop, I don't even know about that. Anyway, though, this mix works. And Billboard names them on their Heat Seekers albums chart.
Stop it.
Yeah, they make it to number 6. And they were officially an up-and-coming band.
So this just tells me that you can never trust anything Billboard magazine ever says.
They pretty much stepped in it on that
one. Yeah, they did.
So So now, Elizabeth, they are officially an up-and-coming band, and Billboard has basically proven, as you point out, that they have no validity.
Zero credibility now.
And, well, you know, what are you going to do with Rob Tall University now that he is an actual rock star and he can point to himself in the pages of Billboard magazine?
Oh, no. Is he going to take the magazine to the banks?
Well, he's going to go bigger.
Yeah.
It's the year 2010, and so things are changing. The culture's shifting. Mm-hmm. He's like, I got to get ahead of things. So to keep momentum going for his entirely pretend band, the frontman went for the biggest gambit yet. He said, I need to go bigger. I need to get stars involved.
Yes.
Yeah. So for his next music video, he ups the star power and he hires out the rapper The Game.
Wait, what?
Yeah. He asked The Game to come over and star in his video for his new latest Lights Over Paris banger, I'm Not a Gangsta.
Wait. No. Like hearing the first lyric set, like that. And now I'm not a no.
Oh, so
really?
just imagine a Seth Green person doing an impression of Tom Cruise walking up to some girls in a bar. That's how the video starts. Well, no, I left out a part. First, the video starts with like a girl's fingering the buttons of an old school jukebox. Uh-huh. Right, she seductively presses a button, and the song starts. The song that we don't want to hear.
I'm
not a gangster comes out. Right, and then this, you know, the pop backbeat, it drops. And when I say drops, imagine like a Kleenex landing on a bed of cotton balls and just drop. Okay, so now you mentioned the lyrics from the last song.
Yes.
I got more lyrics for you, girl.
Thank you. I need these.
You ready?
Yeah.
The lyrics go, down in Cali, the girls drink until they go crazy and smoke until they all get dizzy. She told me I could call her my baby. None of those rhyme. Cali, crazy, dizzy, baby.
They're slant rhymes.
But whatever, slant rhymes. So it keeps going.
Oh, good.
Yeah, she told me I could call her my baby, but just for the night. We were coasting all the way down to the ocean, and then she slipped something inside my hand. Can you guess what she slipped inside his hand, Elizabeth?
I'm so scared of what Bebe's kid put in her hand.
I've got good news for you. Uh-huh. I don't know what it is.
Oh, he doesn't say.
He never says. He's like, who knows? Who cares?
He was like, he was afraid. I'm like, there's no good way to go with that.
No, he's just left it to the imagination.
It was either like a permission slip for her to go on a field trip. Or, I mean, who knows?
And I do not want
a bloody knife. I mean, there's so many ways I can go with this.
Instead, he keeps it
a
moving.
Rotten banana. I mean, I can keep going.
So instead, he just sings, and this is what I said. I'm not a gangster, but I would ride for you. And if it came down to it, I would die for you. I'm not a gangster, but I get high with you. I would throw away my whole life for you. Okay, one, I don't think he understands what a gangster is, just right off the bat. I'm just going to take that. Two, did he write this as a love song to his own ego? Because, man, that last line really turned out to be prophetic.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I would ruin my whole life or whatever. So, and also, three, this is where the song really starts to get good. And by good, I mean just not as bad, right? Uh-huh. So this is when the rapper The Game shows up.
Oh.
Now, I'm guessing The Game was like, well, if the check clears,
I'm thinking.
Right?
He's like, I will soak this fella.
Apparently the check cleared because Elizabeth, he was there.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, after the break, uh-huh. I will be back to tell you all about what The Game does on this video shoot. I'm sure that it's going to bend your brain.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Elizabeth, I promised you the game on the set of Lights Over Paris with my man Rob Tall University.
Yes.
Now, this is going to be so good. I'm just going to need you to just pretty much just close your eyes.
They are closed.
And picture it.
Yes.
Downtown LA. Nighttime. The industrial section, the arts district. You are standing by a generator drinking coffee with a pair of Teamster truck drivers. You're in charge of a Rolls Royce, part of the luxury vehicle rental package for the music video shoot. You've never heard of the band. You could care less about the band. You don't even care about the shoot. But when you heard that the game would be on the set, that's when you decided you would be the one to take this gig. Normally, you'd send over one of your coworkers for these late-night independent shoots, but you are a huge fan of the game. And ever since he first dropped his EP back in the day, on the label of JT the Bigga Figga, you have been down with the game. Now, when he dropped his major label album, The Documentary, you thought that album was a masterpiece.
Yes.
In fact, you still haven't forgiven 50 Cent for pushing the game out of Dr. Dre's Aftermath Records.
No,
that was wrong.
I will never forgive him for that.
But now this video shoot is your chance to finally see the game up close and personal.
Oh, yeah.
Now, at the moment, one of the pair of Teamster truck drivers is having a big chest rumble and chuckle. It's the spring of 2011, and you were all laughing about the late-night talk show host take on Obama ordering the strike that took out Osama bin Laden.
That's funny.
Yeah, Kimmel did a Weekend at Bernie's spoof that had bin Laden enjoy, quote, one last day in the sun. It's a weird time in the culture.
Oh, God.
Anyway, you see the game as he steps out of his trailer. It's one of those rental Star Wagons trailers, the kind that they're always on the streets of the valley
right.
for real movie shoots. Whoever is paying for this music video shoot is going all out.
So I say, hey, baby.
So this young production assistant tells you it's time to bring around the Rolls Royce for this part of the shoot. But you were already headed over to speak with the game. You planned to tell him all about how much 50 Cent was a bum, but
yes.
You're like, I guess that can wait, you think to yourself as you go wandering over to get the car. You are at work. You can always speak with him later since you're the one who'll be bringing the car around.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be in the car.
Oh.
So you will have a moment with him no matter what. So you go walking off on the soaked down streets, the ones that are wetted to look the best for a music video.
Mm-hmm.
And you splash through the puddles of neon light. And then you hop in the whip and you do your best impression of driving Miss Daisy. And you wheel that luxury auto around the late night downtown video shoot. And when you get back to the set with the car, you hear the video playback booming the song. It bounces off the downtown canyon walls. The lyrics you hear are thankfully from the games portion of the song, but they are not good.
Oh no.
Peace to my old girl, got me a new one. She's so hood, she's so me. Our love is like a drug and we OD. Cause got me a winner. Charlie Sheen invited us for dinner.
Oh, yikes.
And we both went in her and we both went our separate ways. And Charlie had this to say, I'm not a gangster.
Okay, someone needs to go get tested.
You roll up the window and park the car. You sit there for a moment. You wonder if this is really how you want to spend your one wild life. You contemplate turning the Rolls Royce back on and just driving away.
Yes.
But you have bills to pay, and so your boss is expecting his car back at the rental place. So instead, you tell yourself, I'm not a gangster. And then you open the door to the Rolls Royce, step out, and shut the door. You ask a production assistant, where can I find Mr. Lights Over Paris? Okay, now
I'm just going to go take a Silkwood shower.
Get that off. Can you imagine the Charlie Sheen of it all?
No, I can't. I don't want to.
At the start of 2011, Rob Tall University is on top of the world. You'd have to look up to see him.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So he's the front man of a fake band. He has a very real custom tour bus.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a spot on the Billboard's chart for up-and-coming new bands.
Right.
He's got an album that's out there. It's an EP. It's a couple songs. Uh-huh. But he's got videos and the game. In it, and you know, things are about to go boom for him. But then the banks show up and they're like, hey man, remember when we gave that dude that money? Like, yeah, has he paid us back yet? No, I haven't heard from him, right? Well, they had expected their money back. It wasn't a donation, right? So the trouble starts with a series of friendly calls, right? Now, these are not actually calls from Bank of America. These are not quotes, but this is how I imagine the calls would have gone.
This is probably way better.
Yeah, so, sir, it's Bank of America calling. We keep missing you. This is the fourth message we've left. We'd like to discuss your repayment schedule for your loans. Please call at your earliest convenience. In a couple of days.
Sure,
pass.
Sure.
Sir, Bank of America calling. Still haven't heard from you. Please call back at your earliest convenience. Another week passes. Bank of America again. Look, man, you have millions of dollars of our money, and we expect you to pay it back. You better call us back. Another week goes by, still no hearing nothing from him. Bank of America gets back on the phone. Hey, man, Bank of America, you trying to dodge us? You think that's going to work out for you? Bank of America is going to get its money, pal. But you know what? You go. You run and hide. You try to hide from us because Bank of America is going to find you. Your ass is grass, and we are the lawnmower. Good day, sir. Now, that's just how I imagine it.
That is not what Bank of America said. That's their call center script.
That's the vibe, though.
Not mistaken.
Right? I've never worked in a call center, but it seems like that's what they would say.
Anyway, I guess. Who knows?
August 2011 rolls around. He's still managing to dodge the banks as they're circling on him going, where's our millions of dollars? So the front man eventually does have to call the banks back. So what does he say? What's he going to tell them about the money and his rise to stardom? Is he going to be like, the investment's going great, guys. We're on the Billboard's Hot Seekers album chart. Well, he explains, he calls him up and he's like, look, I know I missed your guys' calls, but I was on the road, man, rock star.
Hey,
I was on
life.
Tour, you know how it is. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, when are we going to get our money? He's like, about that, man, I got updates. Look, okay, so I'm going to put everything on the table with you guys. I was in a car wreck. I'm on pills now, so things aren't going so well for me. I'm dealing with an incredible amount of pain here, guys.
The bank's like, that sounds like a you problem.
Exactly. They're like, where's our money, Rob? So he's like, look, and by the way, Elizabeth, just to keep facts on the table, there was no car accident, and I don't know if
really?
He was on pills. But
I'm sure
anyway,
he was. But...
So the banks
are allegedly.
Like, yeah, so at this point, the banks are fully after him. So what does our amateur Ponzi scammer do next? Well, he keeps reaching for those stars, and he's running out of time. But in October of 2011, Lights Over Paris is booked to play a big gig in L.A., right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Is this their first gig?
No, he's playing, like, small gigs at this point.
Okay.
But he's going to play a gig at the Roxy. This would be, like, their first gig, right?
All right.
It's a club up on the Sunset Strip, and it's, like, you know, rock star legends.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a space you want to be in, right? For some reason, I'm thinking he knew the banks might know that he was going to be there because he's Lights Over Paris, and he's worried that if I go somewhere where it's been advertised, there's going to be people waiting for me. So what does he do? He sends a DJ. He's like, just go hit play on like the laptop. Yes, he sends a DJ to his biggest gig yet. And
were they playing, like, were they opening for somebody or was
no,
it
was his gig.
Headline?
He's just going to be, you be Lights Over Paris
Did
tonight.
Did anyone buy tickets?
I don't know the deal on that part.
I have so many questions. Yeah. I'm going to call the Roxy later.
So he gets to the gig, the DJ, and a process server is there to meet
him with
court papers. And he's like, are you Mr. Lights Over Paris? And the guy's like, no, yeah, it says assume. I mean, I just said that on stage, but I'm not him. It's complicated. Like, well, here. And they hit him with the papers, right? The papers are not from the bank. They're from his landlord. He's now being sued because he's months behind on rent as well. He's pretty much blown the cash at this point. The millions are gone, right? So what does our man do now? Well, he finally does something smart. Finally something I'm proud of. He leaves the country. He gets the hell out of Dodge.
I'm thinking about, like, if I suddenly had all this money in my head, I'm like, okay, I could pay the electric bill really easily. Oh my gosh, I could pay water, no problem. This cat.
Yeah, no, he's in Mallorca. So he's like, I'm out of here. But then he does the another Rob Tall University thing. He comes back. He comes back to America for God knows what reason. In February 2013, he has a flight coming in from Buenos Aires, and he touches down in Miami International Airport. Uh-huh. It was an auspicious day for him. It was his 30th birthday, and his life was about to change. He was a man now. No, that's not what it was. When he walks into Miami International, there's a crowd of folks there to meet him. It's like a real rock star returning home. There's all these people with cameras. But no, it was a flock of feds. The feds were there to meet him at the airport. They arrest the front man, and his rock star dreams were now officially done.
Yeah,
he was in court the very next day to be arraigned. And then what does he do the day after that? He's bailed out. He goes into a bank and he asks, I kid you not.
Stop it.
He has to try to defraud the bank for millions of dollars to pay off the banks that he's now in trouble for.
Oh my God, this guy.
According to the
This is the day after he gets out.
The day after. After he's arraigned, the U.S. Attorney's Office, like when you read the reports, they're just like shocked by this guy. At one point, they're like, quote, the day after he pleads guilty, he goes into a credit union in Orange County, California, and it does exactly the same crime one more time. That's in the
report. In a credit union.
Yes, totally. He's like, do you guys have the same reporting as banks? So I don't know why he thinks he can get away with this. He's not good, but anyway, whatever. You know, he decides to go for it. And he said he wanted to just, as I said, give all the money to the banks. He's like, oh, I'm trying to defraud them to pay you guys. I'm just like, it's not.
I mean, just spread it around.
Yeah,
right
screw
now.
Them, right, guys? But his lawyer, the guy we already met, Al Jarin, he claimed that his client was not the one who was at fault, right?
And I
already
told you. Never his fault.
Yeah, he said, he quote, he knowingly submitted false numbers on fraudulent documents, but the banks took them at face value.
Oh,
they kept
God.
Upselling him. So he's claiming that the banks didn't do their job.
He went in there for fraudulent purposes.
Like
but...
his client. He's like, if they would have done their job, my client couldn't have gotten away with this.
Oh, God.
So, I just love that. And then he said, because they did give him, as I told you, additional loans, his lawyer says, quote, the banks were really eager to loan him a lot of money, and they did go with him. They showed him around the recording studio. They looked at face value what he was telling them and the documentation he was showing them, and they loaned Rob the money. Damn it, banks, why did you do
this,
that?
Rob is why the rest of us can never get anything taken at face value.
Oh my God, completely. Well, the judge, of course, threw this out. He just laughed at the face of it. He's like, lol. And then, his girlfriend comes into court. She's trying to, like, you know, help him out. I don't know how he has a girlfriend, but he has a girlfriend, someone, like, really loves and cares and believes in his dream. And she says, and I quote, I know that Rob knows what he did was wrong, but I also know is that a lot of what Rob did came from the passion of wanting to live out his dream. The dream of being a rock star. Starting Lights Over Paris was not a selfish attempt at fame, but rather a way to involve so many people in a shared dream.
Oh, yes, poor dear.
I would love to imagine that. Now, remember the brothers? They were dragged in, the Salazar brothers?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were part of that shared dream. Well, they got their time in court, too, as part of that shared dream.
No.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So he broke some off for them, too.
$1.7 million for them, yeah.
Oh.
And so they had to plead guilty to loan fraud, and they also went to prison.
Yeah,
so
that's what
thanks
happened.
For that shared dream. And then there's Lights Over Paris, the band. You might be wondering, what about the band?
Yeah, what about the band?
How can we get that band back together? Well, keep in mind, session musicians, right? We've gone over that, but the band is not calling it quits. I don't know what that means because there is no band, but apparently a Japanese record label signed Rob and the band to a recording contract, and this happened just before he pleaded guilty, right?
Okay.
So this was like, he finally got his dream, right? He made it. He signed the record
got
contract.
A record deal.
So anyway, in the meantime, he can now write new songs while he's behind bars. It worked out for Merle Haggard. I mean,
that's
like
true.
Maybe this could do it,
that's
but
true.
At the moment, he's in a federal prison in El Paso, Texas, a place called Latuna. If you were in a place called Latuna, Texas,
you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
You're in the soup, baby.
Wait, go ahead.
I'm just thinking like he would never make money off of what he's doing. But like if he were to make royalties, it would go to
restitution.
Restitution.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, he's going to make royalties.
They're like, well, start writing.
Yeah, get all those pennies from YouTube. Send them that way. So, dude spends his days now learning Spanish, taking yoga classes, and fiddling around on the guitar.
Well, sounds good.
2020 caught up to him. They did an interview from jail, from prison, rather. Rob Tall University said of his brief time as a rock star, and I quote, "The thing I regret is kind of losing control. My lifestyle, it was crazy. And I was hoping deep down that I could rectify the situation and pay these things back."
Deep down.
It was crazy,
it was,
man.
So crazy.
You can hear the music, the lyrics in how he talks. He's like, just right there.
You guys, it was so crazy what everyone made me do.
Could you believe that? That was wild, guys. So it must have been like so far down in him, that desire to rectify the situation, that it was just buried by all of his burning desire to
be
famous.
Oh, yeah. It was like a log jam.
Yeah. He couldn't
of
get.
Of intentions.
Yeah. Just, yeah. Exactly. All fluxed up there.
And who did that? Who did that to him?
Oh, the banks. Elizabeth, do we have a ridiculous takeaway here?
My ridiculous takeaway would be, number one, I still don't understand how these banks went ahead and made those loans.
I mean, I didn't think that a studio, even if it was making $12 million, would be something that they would want to put a collateral of. We're going to give you $3 million against.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And more than one bank.
Yeah. Do you want to get into the recording industry as Bank of America?
No. So, yeah. Anyway.
And can you sell that to somebody? I don't think it's worth that enough on paper that it's like it carries value.
No, I wouldn't think so. My takeaway is that this whole thing makes no sense.
No. There you go.
Yeah.
Money is not real.
No. It's not.
Well, thanks for that one, Zarin. You're welcome, Zarin. So, I'm just going to do it for you, Elizabeth. If you're not going to do it, I'm doing it for you, all right? You can find us online if you'd like at Ridiculous Crime on both Twitter and Instagram. We also have a pitching new website, ridiculouscrime.com. Email us if you'd like at ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. Also, we do talkbacks on the iHeart app, so download that and talk back at us. Well, once again, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Ridiculous Crimes, hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by lead singer and driver of the Winnebago, Dave Kustin. Research is by Marissa Lights Over Paris, Texas Brown and Andrea Lights Over Paris, Indiana Song Charpentier. Our theme song is by Thomas String Daddy Lee and Travis the String Cheese Incident cover band director Dutton. Executive producers are Ben, we need a tour bus, Bolin, and no, we need a tour train, Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.